Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, you're listening to We Are History. I'm Angela Barnes.
And I'm John O'Farrell.
Oh, and it's a big one this week, John. We all know this one.
We think we do, Angela, but there's a lot more to it.
It is 1066, John. Battle of Hastings. 1066 always presented as the first date you learn in history, isn't it? And therefore, it must be the most important thing that ever happened. Is that right?
Well, it is. Maybe that Yeatman and Seller book, 1066 and all that. It was like, yeah, history sort of starts with 1066 and take it from there. But why? Why is it important? Why is it significant? Is it because we were taught the dusty old story of kings and queens? Mm. Has it got that image to you, Angela?
Yeah, it's one of those that there's sort of bits of history that in my head, I can't remember what is history and what are fairy tales. Do you know what I mean? You just go,
oh, this is a lovely fairy tale.
Princess and the Pea. Which one of those is real? There's
so William the Conqueror turns into a beast. And
but do you know what I mean? It's one of those stories you think, oh, yeah, Battle of Hastings. I know that one. And then when I actually think about it, I go, oh, well, all I actually know is that William the Conqueror defeats Harold. There's something to do with an arrow in the eye, and then there's a tapestry. And that's really all.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very interesting because I think it has consequences that we still have ramifications today. I think it informs our view of social class today, of misplaced notions of British exceptionalism, and maybe our fearful take on immigration.
So you're going to persuade me, are you, that it's still relevant and interesting? Because I'll admit, John, when you said you wanted to do Battle of Hastings, I was like, well, for a start, I just thought, oh, God, that just makes me go, oh, that's proper history. That's not what we do.
I know, it's a bit first base.
Yeah, and also I thought, I know why John's doing this, because he's written about it in his bloody book. And so all he has to do is read his own book.
The research I've done for this, you won't believe it. No, but when I wrote that history book, I read loads of books about it. So I'm bringing that experience to it. If any jokes are recycled, they are purely for environmental reasons to save natural resources of jokes in the joke mine.
Because we all know that jokes do a lot of damage when they're released into the sea, don't they, John?
Mine do. So a bit of background on 1066. Well, of course, England was a Saxon kingdom. It had been unified.
Are we not going back to the Romans, John? No.
I think 1066, we can just go back 100 years to Athelstan. Athelstan was the greatest of the Saxons, in my opinion. He doesn't get the great like his grandfather did, who Alfred the Great. But it was Athelstan who united England over 100 years before Hastings. He had a little coin made that said ruler of all Britannicum, you know. So, yes, it was quite an advanced European country, Saxon
People
England.
People do want the background of it. Go back to our Ethelred the Unready.
Yes, indeed.
We did cover a lot of Saxon history in that, didn't we?
We did. I mean, life in England was very sort of, the style was very heavy metal. It was all axes and leather and Vikings turning up all over the place.
John, you're turning me on.
But, you know, if you're a new romantic or a mod, you were out of fashion. You were in the wrong place.
No frilly cuffs in Saxon Britain.
No, very much so. It's very much sort of, you know, Spinal Tap and all that. 1066 comes along. There were three kings on the English throne in 1066. In January came the death of Edward the Confessor. So he was the son of Ethelred the Unready.
Again, podcast.
See earlier podcast. And why was he called Edward the Confessor, Angela?
Did he confess something, John?
It's every time anything happened, it was like, sorry, guys, that was me.
Yeah. Who broke the window?
Yeah, we were playing indoor cricket. I was just having a laugh, all right? Don't give me a hard time. So, no, he was very pious. He was the one who started the building of Westminster Abbey. He had fallen into a coma before naming his heir.
Now, this is a big deal, isn't it, in at this time days. Because there wasn't an obvious heir like there is now, was there?
No, I don't think he had a son ready to take over. But they had a powerful Earl of Essex, Harold.
Is that Harold Godwinson?
Harold Godwinson, yeah. And he said, oh, he woke up. I went in there and he woke up for a bit and he said, I should be king.
So honest, what, he did.
Well, Edward was in a coma. He woke up just to say, Harold, mate, you should have it after me. But his mother had been Emma of Normandy. So that's where the little Norman involvement comes in. And over at the other side of the channel, William, who's only the Duke of Normandy there, said, hang on a minute. When Harold was shipwrecked in Normandy, I had him come in with me and he promised me that I could be the next King of England. Harold said he wouldn't go for it. The fact that there were a load of my knights with very sharp swords standing behind him, nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it was completely his own free will.
Absolutely. He said, no, you have it, mate. I've got plenty going on with being Earl of Wessex. I don't need to be King of England as well. So when Harold became Harold II of England and rose to the Saxon throne.
So he did rise to the Saxon throne then after.
He did. He was sort of voted in by various Saxon nobles. He wasn't of royal blood. He was a duke or an earl or whatever. Duke of
and
earl.
Presumably with the surname Godwinson of Viking.
Well, I think it's all a bit mixed up. Yeah, it does sound a bit Viking,
doesn't
it? Yeah,
by this point.
I wonder if his sixth sister was Godwin's daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so, actually. I think that was just Saxon. But anyway, William decided he was going to invade. And he tried to go around getting support for an invasion of England. Mm. But all the other noblemen of sort of Northern Europe were like, I can't, mate. Zumba. I've got my Zumba class. I would do, but I said I'd take the wife to her mum's. So we're doing that at the weekend.
Why were they not keen, John?
Because it was irreligious. It was not the will of God.
Right.
And also they might get killed. That's another fact.
Well, that too, yeah.
But then William goes, but when Harold was with me, he swore an oath on some sacred relics.
So now it is a religious issue.
Now that he gets the church to say, give him his blessing.
It's funny, isn't it, John, that you never mentioned the religious relics the first time round.
I know, but the religious relics is like, so he swore on some actual bones, not the actual bones, of a saint, not a saint. You know, but it's like, these relics were like these things that were all over Europe. Bits of the true cross on which Christ had died, the bones of St. Peter, whatever. And they're all just swept up bits of wood that some con man had put in a...
Bits of the Berlin Wall, isn't it?
Bit of the Berlin Wall is a bit of the Berlin Wall. It's not. That is a proper bit of the Berlin Wall.
I still managed to bring that up even in an episode on the Battle of Hastings, how I don't believe John's bit of the Berlin Wall.
It is. My mate brought it back. He's funny. Maybe he was well lying. But anyway, once the church gave William his blessing, he started to get support from the other noblemen over the channel and began to assemble a fleet. Mm. Harold's spies are aware of this threat and they've got an army in readiness for William's invasion.
So we're talking sort of summertime at the moment, are we?
Yeah, summer 1066.
Yeah, 1066. And like then you couldn't just go, right, let's go and invade now. We'll just pop
No Stenner line then. No Brittany Ferries.
No booze cruises to Calais. So you had to wait for the wind to be right?
Yes.
To get you from Normandy to Britain. It wasn't just a case of, right, get in your boat and let's steer it.
No, it's before the Arab sails came into Europe, you know, where you could tack and steer, sail into the wind. The old European sails were just big flat squares of sheet and you had to go whichever way the wind blew.
So William sat with his sort of amassed troops in Normandy waiting for the wind to blow the right way.
Yeah, now he'd assembled about 7,000 sort of Flemish, Breton, Norman knights. They had all the equipment, siege equipment, you know, horses. They're a cavalry army, whereas the Saxons are very much more foot soldier. But, you know, all of August or September just didn't happen.
Harold's army had just sat in England going, coming in, where are they?
Yeah, no, they're going, right, well, we've got stuff to do, Harold, mate. I've got the harvest to get in. It's like it's August now and the corn is turning golden. I've got to go back. And he's going, no, can everyone stay here, please? Look, don't go off. Yeah, everyone, no, at the back. Can you stop talking, please? So he's trying to hold his army together. Right. And he goes, right. And then he gets a message. Oh, hang on. We've got to go to Yorkshire now. What?
To Yorkshire? What?
You just said stay here, mate. Mm. It's like, no, because now his half-brother, Tostig, has decided he's going to invade.
That's definitely Scandinavian, Tostig.
He was. It was him and the King of Norway.
Yeah, Hardrada. Harald Hardrada.
Yeah, King of Norway. That's right. And they had designs on the English throne as well, because the throne was sort of contested because he wasn't an automatic royal, you see.
What was it about the English throne that was so desirable to have? Is it just is it a good strategic place, I suppose?
Well, I think anything where you've got lush, fertile land and money to be made from tithes and whatever. I mean, you know, they're all conquering each other all the time. I think the fact that the throne was contested made it like a power grab by various noblemen who thought they could increase their power.
Like when someone wants something, it becomes attractive, right?
That's what it is. It's like, I want it now. You didn't want it until your half-brother got it.
Now you want it. I want it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how it worked out. So they landed. They won a battle up in Yorkshire. First round tie against local Northern Army. Plucky part-timers from Yorkshire. Didn't stand a chance. But suddenly they're through to the next round against Harold. And he's marching up to Yorkshire with his Saxon army, leaving Sussex behind. And they're going up.
So he's got his army amassed in Sussex waiting for Normans.
Yeah.
His brother and the King of Norway have arrived in Yorkshire. So he's like, come on, lads, up we go. Yeah.
So do you know where the battle
Stamford
was?
Bridge.
The Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, Chelsea.
Yeah, not no, they said, no, he's going, it's Chelsea. That's not that Stamford Bridge, you idiots. It's a place called Stamford Bridge in Yorkshire. Oh, no, you've got to walk all the way up there. The thing about the Battle of Stamford Bridge now is every time there's a slight skirmish at a Chelsea match, everyone goes, it's the Battle of Stamford Bridge. Yeah, Daily Mail headline, Battle of Stamford Bridge. There was a story about 10 years ago with the daughter of Earl Spencer, who was invited to Chelsea. And so they put Stamford Bridge in the sat-nav and they went all the way to Yorkshire and didn't get to see the game.
Oh, you're joking.
Yeah, it was in all the papers.
At what point
do
you go, though? I think...
Yeah, I know. What about you?
They're going a bit far.
Football.
Like, I'm pretty sure...
They were driving from Derbyshire or something, and they just went north instead of south. They were just chatting away in the back of the car. I think it might have even been the taxi driver who did it, but it's good. Good
that reminds me of a lovely story of Sean Walsh, the comedian, was doing a gig in Hartford.
Yeah.
And he got a bit confused when he read his... And he doesn't drive, so he got the train to Hereford.
Oh, no, that's so far away.
So far away.
Hereford. Oh, God, that's
and
sort of what
his audience and his support act were all waiting for him.
Oh, no, what a disaster.
And the venue phoned and said, where are you? He's like about 5 minutes away from the venue. So they wait and he gets to the venue. The venue's all locked up. No one's there. So he phones them.
Oh,
what
God.
Venue are you at? Hereford. No.
No. Oh, no, what a disaster.
So they have to send everyone
I'm sure I've
home.
Done things like that. I'm sure I've done things like that before. Anyway, Harold went to the right Stamford Bridge for his battle. He didn't go to Chelsea's ground, which hadn't been built yet. Chelsea's ground built very late, long after Fulham's ground.
John, I've fallen asleep. What are you banging on about?
So Harold wins an overwhelming victory up north. That Battle of Stamford Bridge sort of ends the Scandinavian threat to England forever. That is the end of the Vikings, the end of the Norwegians.
Actually, had what happened next not happened next, We'd all be talking about the Battle of Stamford Bridge.
We probably would, yeah. Yeah, we'd probably be very famous.
Like you say, that was the end of... The Vikings have been relentlessly invading
they've been a nuisance
throughout that period. And so they had arrived in, 300 longboats, but they went home in 25. That's how decisive that battle was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that there's a couple of sort of attempts for the Vikings to come back, but pretty much that ended...
Yeah.
The Viking invasions of Britain, which is a
Until
massive
Abba.
Deal at that
Until
time.
Abba.
Until Abba.
Yeah. And IKEA.
Yeah. But, that, you know, it just seems mad to me that that's not the one that we remember. The one
because of what happened next, really.
So,
few days after, news comes through that William the Conqueror has landed in Sussex. William the what? What's his name?
Exactly. For a start, that's going to be a worry, isn't it?
Yeah.
William the who now? William
the Conqueror. No, don't take notice of his nickname, Harold.
Don't let that affect your confidence, Harold. It's going to be fine.
Many meanings to Conqueror. Actually, William's nickname was not the Conqueror then, of course, because he hadn't conquered us.
No, that was very much later.
He was called William the Bastard.
Which is much better.
No, it's like, I'm not sure he banded that around in the pub. Hey, William the Bastard's here. No, his dad had an affair with a tanner's daughter.
A tanner's daughter?
Yeah, not Angela, a tanner like in Body Brown, The Electric Beach. When we were doing the Black Death, I talked about tanners and Angela
tanner
was like,
is,
tanners?
John.
Tanners, really back
just
then?
Because I'm from Kent, I'm not an orange woman. Let me just get this straight. So he's been waiting all summer for the Normans to come. They don't come. but the Vikings do. So he goes up there, sees off these Vikings, and he's now got an army that's potentially a bit tired and a bit sort of depleted, having just done this big battle. And now the North, it's like, not now, William the Bastard.
I know. William the Bastard turned up. And he's a bit of a bastard as well. There's a story that when William the Bastard was besieging a castle in France, they all hung out animal hides to mock his parentage.
Right.
And when he took the castle, he chopped the feet off 32 of them on the
chopped
other side.
Chopped their feet off?
Yeah. He just, a bit of satire. He didn't like the satire. A little bit of laughter at his nickname. Yeah. And he just made them all...
What would he do if they'd had spitting image in those
I know. Days? So William the Bastard was his name. If you're listening to this and you're still at school age, just keep pointing this out to the teacher. So was he called William the Bastard? Or Ido Farrell? No, but that's that his name, sir. William the Bastard.
Bastard? What's a bastard, sir?
So you have our permission to do that if you're still in school. Anyway, Harold rushes down to Sussex. Now, he could have waited. He could have regrouped his forces, paused at London to rearm and stuff like that. But he didn't. And that might have been his
mistake. That's a major thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, what... I suppose at that point, you've got this invading army who are starting to ransack settlements and whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he's the Earl of Wessex. So they're in Wessex. And so he has... It's his manor. He's going, oh, that's my friends and relations. He's sort of, you know, burning down their houses and killing everybody.
So you can understand why he did rush back with the army, even though it might have been more sensible to regroup, rearm and prepare. Yeah.
So he gets down, he goes down to Sussex, and the two armies face each other. Who would win? What would be the fate of England? That, Angela, is where I think we should take a break. And you're going to have to wait to find out. Oh, you can't leave Sir Basil like that. Do you remember Basil Brush? He'd close the book and go, you can't leave Sir... Oh, this is for people of a certain age.
Anyone under 40 has no idea what you just did then, John.
Basil, the farmer, the knight in shining armour. Oh, he died the other day, didn't he? He died. Basil's friend died, didn't he, the other day?
We're going to take a break while John goes and takes his medication. We'll be back shortly.
Does what's going on in the American election scare and bemuse you in equal measure?
Want to know what Biden and Trump are up to without tearing your hair out?
Then you need to listen to American Friction, the brand new podcast about the countdown to the big vote in November from the makers of Oh God, What Now?, The Bunker and Paper Cuts.
Every Friday, we'll speak to leading experts and blockbuster commentators from the United States to explain the latest news and the big issues behind the vote.
That's American Friction with me, Jacob Jarvis.
Me, Chris Jones.
And me, Nikki McCann Ramirez.
Out every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, John, we are back. Just a little recap. It's 1066. The Anglo-Saxons have just seen off the Vikings up north, and now they're back in Sussex, where the Normans have arrived.
And they're going to fight this battle, not at Hastings, is it? It's at a place called Battle.
Which makes sense, really.
The way it probably panned out was there's big roadside saying Battle 3 miles. They're going, oh, it's this way, lads. It's down here. It's a big signpost. So this is where you want to go.
There's quite a lot of controversy, isn't there, about, well, the sort of controversy. I think most historians say, no, there isn't controversy. Battle is definitely where the battle was held. Because wasn't Battle Abbey, which incidentally, because I live not that far from there, Battle Abbey is beautiful.
Is it?
And really worth a visit. But that was said to be built by William the Conqueror. On the site of the battle.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think it was his sort of biographer who first said that. So there's no real reason to doubt it, although there have been some suggestions that it wasn't there, but really doesn't matter.
So it wasn't at Hastings. That's the main thing. Hastings is nearby, but they landed at Pevensey Bay.
You know what the hospital's called in Hastings?
It's
called the Conquest.
The Conquest. Well, all of this area is called 1066 country, isn't it? Mm. So back then, those signs would have been really new, I suppose. But,
them every year up to that
point. That's right. So William landed. When he landed, by the way, he stepped out from the boat and he tripped and fell. And he picked up, and everyone thought, oh, this is very suspicious back then. They went, oh, that's a bad omen. But he picked up and the sand in his hands and went, look, I already have England in my grasp. And they went, oh, that's very good. Very good, what sir. Right. He was a bit of a bastard, so you had to laugh at his jokes.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But this may be a myth, because, or he may have done this deliberately, because it's exactly what happened with Julius Caesar when he landed on the south coast. He did the same thing and did the same line.
There was another Roman, wasn't there, John?
Oh, there was.
Yeah, that Halley's
Comet. 1, 2, 3 o'clock, rock around the clock. Yeah.
Halley's Comet.
Bill Haley and the comets were going through the sky. And,
that's right. They said,
or something. Or some
they're
shit.
Dressed weird.
Yeah.
No, so they saw Halley's Comet, and that was thought to be an omen
either way, yeah. I mean, that features in the Bayeux Tapestry, which we'll come on to. But yeah, as I said, William had turned up with 7,000 Normans, Bretons and Flemish, all their gear, all their horses, no weight limit on the luggage back then. They were there for sort of like a medieval share issue, really. He was like, because, you know, well, how do you motivate some Breton nobleman to join your invasion force? Well, you say, well, look what you could win. This lovely manor house in the English countryside. Comes with farm, horses, and lovely little moat. And there's a vegetable garden for your missus. So that's basically what it was. It was like, take part in this, and you could win a house.
It was sort of quite elite knights that he'd brought with him, wasn't it? And I think, is it worth mentioning that they were on horseback, which wasn't the way Saxons fought. Saxons were very much foot soldiers.
Yeah, yeah, so it's two different race styles here, yeah.
Yeah, the Normans had adopted this sort of horseback style of fighting. Yeah. So already that's a
sort of uneven style. I'd say it's an uneven contest.
Pretty uneven.
Really.
Horses are massive.
Yeah, except that. So given that, with the battle, you know, looking like it's about to begin, the Saxon foot soldiers, they all take up a position on the top of a hill and wait for the Normans to ride up the hill and attack. And they were like, oh, this is a bit, that's a bit hard riding up that hill. Nothing happens. So but before the battle, in between the lines, a Norman minstrel walks out between the two armies and he sings the Song of Roland. You know, guess what happens to him?
Does he get killed by
someone just kills him. It's like, you must have had heckles like
I've had heckles, but I've never had an arrow through me.
No, just for someone
actually,
didn't like
don't
you.
Give him ideas, John.
Yeah. What's the worst heckle you've had then, Angela?
I've had lots of sexist heckles. The worst one I've had, or just in terms of it just being really boringly sexist, was before I'd even got to the microphone, somebody shouted out, get back in the fucking kitchen, was nice. To be honest, heckling doesn't happen as much as you think it does. Also, most heckles, really easy to deal with because it's idiots who haven't really thought it through.
That's what they said to this minstrel.
That's it.
they said, don't worry about the hecklers. Just go out there and sing the Song of Roland. Once they'd killed the Norman entertainer, who was doing a nice warm-up.
Yeah, he was just trying to foster a bit of fun.
Yeah, well, the Normans were across then. So they start to charge their horses up the hill, hoping they could break through the Saxon shield wall.
That's what they've done, isn't it? They've
massive shield wall, top of the hill.
Massive shield wall was their way of defence. Yeah. And actually, they were in a good position, right? The top of the hill is where you want to be. So they should have, even though their numbers were fewer.
Yeah.
They were in a good position.
And Harold, as long as we keep this formation, just do not break the shield wall. Do not, you know, break it. Has everyone got that? Can you all hear me? Yeah. Something about breaking the formation or something? Yeah, do not chase the retreating Normans. What have we got to do? Is it chase the Normans? Did he say chase the Normans? So basically, the Bretons attacked up the gentlest slope and then turned around and ran away. And they're like, run away. So then some of the Saxons, they went, they ran away quick. Didn't he say stay? Wasn't it something about staying up here? Look, no, we're going to miss them. So they broke formation, chased after them. Then the Normans, some more horses, come round the corner, gallop up the hill through the broken shield wall and start hacking away at the Saxons on foot. And that is the key moment of the battle.
So they faked a retreat.
It was a feigned retreat, yeah. Happened all along the line then after that. And suddenly the tide of the battle was turning and two of Harold's brothers get killed. And then Harold himself finally cops it.
Now, John, did he... You know what I'm going to ask?
Did he have life insurance?
Yes.
His premium went up when he had all these battles.
Did he get an arrow in the eye?
We really don't know, Angela. I think probably is the case. It's argued that on the tapestry, the bloke with the arrow in his eye is not Harold. Because it says Harold dies, but there's people dying all over the place underneath.
Yeah.
And the guy next to the guy getting the arrow in the eyes, got really fancy socks. And they think maybe the guy in the fancy socks is supposed to be Harold.
I mean, the Bayeux Tapestry, although sort of contemporary,
It's quite not, soon after.
It's yeah. not. You can't. You know, it's rely art, on it. Isn't it? You can't no. really because artistic no. license being a thing. It's like yeah. taking this podcast as a source.
Oh no, you can take this. I mean, there's not just that the Bay of Tapestry. There's one contemporary account that has Harold pulling the arrow from his eye, fighting on till the Norman knight skewers him through the heart, oh. chops off his leg, and then his corpse is castrated for good measure.
Just to make sure he's completely yeah. humiliated.
And then at which point Harold's going, all right, we'll call it a draw. Like the Monty Python night. No, apparently Harold's body was so mutilated that it couldn't be identified, except by certain marks on his body, which his lady friend.
Oh, really?
Was asked to identify. So he must have had a birthmark on his bum or something.
Yeah.
But it was his mistress who was like, not his wife, his mistress who was like, is this Harold? Oh, let me check. Oh, Pull his armour down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's him, definitely.
Oh, yeah. No, that one anywhere.
Yeah. So luckily they didn't put that detail in the Bear Tapestry. So they're hoping for a PG certificate, you know. So
Contains mild peril, graphic violence, mild dead language.
Dead languages. Yeah, oh. there's a...
Those
a lot
tapestry
of
nasties. Oh, not
terrible, terrible, terrible.
So, this is the silliest episode we've ever done, John.
Yeah, so the Bayer tapestry, we should talk about that. It was yes. not Dun & Bayer. It was not a tapestry.
Oh, that's it. I'm out. What? So everything we've been taught a lie, John.
I know. The Canterbury embroidery is what it should be called.
Was it done in Canterbury?
It was done down in your manor. Yeah,
do you know, I think
from.
I did know that because I grew up in Kent and I almost certainly did learn that as a...
Yeah, it obviously stayed with you.
Yes.
But it's clearly it's giving William's versions of events. It's him justifying his invasion. It's people who work for him putting up the narrative of here is Harold swearing on the relics. Here is, you know, me obliged to follow my conscience and take this land that belongs to me. Mm. It's spin. It's middle-aged Pravda, really. History, they say, is knitted by the winners. Angela.
John, that's a joke from your book. I know it is.
Look, I said I was going to recycle them. Oh, dear. So we know that William won the battle, but even William at that point didn't know if he'd won the war, if he would be still see more resistance.
Yeah, it doesn't
resistance.
Necessarily instantly make him King of England because he's killed
No,
Harold.
It doesn't, no.
Really, all Harold needed to do in that battle was survive, wasn't it? Because wasn't there at that time... What, there was a lot of sort of recurring battles for thrones and things. So you could have the battle, survive, go away, regroup, come back yep. and try again. Yeah. You know. So really, by going in all guns blazing immediately, quickly, with a small army, was his downfall.
That was an exhausted army, which had just
an
fought up in Yorkshire.
Because really, yeah. all he needed to do was survive that battle.
Yeah.
And he could
yeah.
have continued fighting.
There would have
the
been
throne.
Sort of war, a war against us. But the... Wouldn't have been many reinforcements for the Normans. They didn't have lots more people to call on.
And they would have, you know, if he prolonged it as well, their supplies would have run out. Would have then had to go out and ransack villages or whatever to get supplies.
Yeah,
it was a battle he absolutely shouldn't have lost, wasn't it?
No, it was...
Certainly
yeah.
died.
Yeah, he's made a big mistake by dying there.
Yeah, what an idiot.
So the Saxons then, there was like, who do we turn to? Mm. And so the next in line for the hereditary... They'd seen what a disaster it had been to have a sort of an elected monarch in Harold, who was just an earl. So they crowned the 13-year-old next in line, this boy, Atheling. And he was useless. And it's like...
Oh, yeah, he's 13. Of course,
he's
13.
He's thinking about sex. He's thinking about spots. Yeah. You know, he's thinking about his underarm body odour. Yeah. He's not thinking about how do I defeat the Norman invaders. Yeah. There were several times when William the Conqueror could have had this boy killed. He could have defeated in battle and had him killed. Mm. And they sort of think, why didn't he do that? And they think that the historians think that maybe he thought this guy is more used to be alive.
Because he's
as
so
the figure,
useless.
A useless teenage figurehead is better than if he died and we had a more effective opposition.
So the Saxons would then go, hang on a minute, this William guy is going to be better than this 13-year-old drip we've got here.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're ever in favour of William, but they're in favour of another Saxon leader they could have got.
Right,
behind.
Got you.
Yeah, yeah. The Saxon resistance crumbled on his march to London, and William was crowned at Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day, 1066.
Just in time to do the King's speech.
That's right, yeah. So he says, yes, that's right. Yeah, exactly. That's probably what it was. He was thinking, then I can do my little broadcast. They read out the oaths in different languages and people got confused and thought there was a riot inside there. And the Normans went outside and killed loads of people on the outside during the thing. And ever since then, the French riot police have been a model of good behaviour and restraint. resistance continued across England after that day. Hereward the Wake, held out near the Isle of Ely. He was like, oh, I'm vegan and I don't use gender pronouns. And they were like, oh no, it's Hereward the Woke. Is this on? You've been great. That's my time. If you go to Peterborough and turn on the radio, you can still hear Hereward FM.
Can you?
Yeah. They named it after their Saxon resistor back in 1066 or 1067.
Resistor, radio.
We're both on form today.
Oh, God.
There was a lot of resistance in the north of England, and there was very, very brutal suppression of that uprising. And what was called the harrying of the north, William's forces killed thousands, they destroyed the crops, they broke ploughs in two. And basically, people starved right across the north of England. In the winter, they ended up eating each other.
Eating each other, didn't they? Yeah,
yeah, they broke open the skulls of dead bodies and ate the brains out. Mm. But that's northern diet for you, isn't it? They love all that stuff, don't they? Up there, faggots and bloody... Yeah.
Luckily, the north-south divide is not a thing today.
But then, you know, over the following decade or so, all the Saxon noblemen were replaced with Norman noblemen.
So this is quite confusing, because suddenly you've got an upper class that's completely changed.
Yeah.
And even speak different languages. They've got different customs, different habits.
Yeah.
It's a complete change of that echelon of society.
That's why I'm so interested in it, because...
Yeah.
For my money, that's where our bloody snobby, unique class system sort of got going, really. Because even today, I think, you know, English upper class snobbery comes with a sort of French sheen. You know, menus in French. And it still is true.
Lower
classes still drink beer and 10 strips of land by the allotment. And the upper classes still drink wine and have second homes in the Dordogne. They've still got that sort of snobby... Yeah. We have the most entrenched class system, I think, because of 1066 and the fact we've never had a revolution since or been invaded since.
We're about due one, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, come on, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. I can't, John. We're in lockdown again.
Of course, that's the reason.
Hello, I'm Dorian Linsky.
And I'm Ian Dunn.
We are the hosts of Origin Story, the podcast that unpacks the history behind the ideas, the people and the events that shape political discourse today.
And we are back for season 5.
We're kicking off with a two-parter on George Orwell, the man, the work, the ideas. We follow him from Burma to Spain, through Second World War London, to the writing of his masterpieces Animal Farm in 1984, and how their legacy is used and misused today.
That's Origin Story Season 5, coming now from anywhere you get your podcasts.
When I wrote my history book about this period, I opened it with my own personal bugbear, which is you go to some posh country garden party and it's like you've walked for a bloody mile to get there. It's boiling hot and they say to you, red or white? You go, oh, I want a lager. It's boiling hot. I want a beer.
I've got to tell you something. That's made me so happy that you've said that, right? So as you know, I'm getting married next year.
Yeah.
And in fact, well, fingers crossed, the wedding can go ahead, the big wedding that we've planned.
Yeah.
And we're having, for our wedding dinner, we're having pie and mash, right?
Yay!
Yeah, I love a bit of pie and mash. And so we were talking about, because I don't really drink wine very often. I'm a Saxon beer girl. So whenever I've gone to weddings, there's always wine on the table. I have to go and buy a beer.
I know, right? It drives me crazy.
And that's fine. But I'm like, at my wedding... Because we're having pie and mash, I think beer and cider goes better with pie and mash.
Absolutely. You're a bloody Saxon. That's what this is telling me.
So, at my wedding, there's going to be beer and cider on the table. And if you want wine, you can bloody well go and buy some.
Or fuck off back to Normandy.
Matt was like, oh, people are going to expect there to be wine on the table.
No, it's a snobby thing.
We drink beer.
Yeah, I'm with you,
Angela. I'm so glad you've said that.
Yeah. So I blame the Normans.
Yeah, bloody Normans.
Every time at these things, my wife was going, do you think they'd mind if I went down the off licence and got some Hofmeister? And Jackie says, you are not coming back here with cans of cold lager from the offy. Just drink some white wine. I'm sitting there sipping this plonk.
I enjoy a beer.
This is what, see, I think.
So John, you're going to have a great time at my wedding.
I'm looking forward to it. Cider and bit fantastic. See, you're from Kent. You're actually a Duke.
Yes.
You're a bit Duke with a bit of Saxon, I think.
Dutish.
And I'm a bit Saxon, a little bit, a lot more Irish, bit of Viking as well, I've discovered. Mm. So that's why we have this, and I genuinely have an aversion to wine. When I drink it, I feel much less well than when I drink loads of beer.
Oh, yeah, so wine hangover.
It's in my DNA.
I can't drink white wine at all. I'll enjoy the occasional glass of red if I'm in the mood. But
it goes back, you see, it goes back generations for us. So anyway, for the lower classes, for us,
that really cheered me up.
Good for us lower classes, Saxon, Celts, Vikings,
sorry,
or whatever.
Us lower classes.
No, I put myself in the Anglo Irish lower classes, oppressed by the Normans.
He says from his lovely big house in Clapham.
Yeah, well, I took that, but I seized it back. The lower classes, serfdom followed. Okay, so serfdom wasn't a thing; it was occasionally a thing, but not right across
England.
Slavery
wasn't a thing for the North. For no, Normans, Saxons. Was it?
No, but serfdom was like a form of slavery, really.
Yeah,
you're enslaved to the land. And so the Saxons were markedly less free after 1066.
Right, yeah.
The laws that they had lived under sort of no longer applied, the laws of Winchester. They weren't free to forage or hunt in forests. If you shot a deer or something, fired your crossbow at a deer, you would have your eyes put out or your hands cut off.
And that's
off
why, isn't it, our words for farm animals are still Anglo-Saxon, because they were the ones...
Yes.
Tending the animals, so your pig, cow, calf, all yes. Anglo-Saxon words.
Exactly right.
But when they were served up as food, then to the Normans, they had to use the posh French words. So that's why pig becomes pork, cow becomes beef, calf becomes veal.
Exactly, and not every country has two words like that.
Yeah.
You know? So the English language, you know, has continued to be enriched down the centuries, but we have more words for things in our language than any other language in the world. Because we've had so many different waves of invasions. Mm. As you say, we have this sophisticated language for the French and the lower class language for the commoners. So the BBC would never go, and the European community has decided there is too much shit on British beaches. The minister said that was a load of bollocks. You know, it's all the, it'll be excrement and dismissed it as nonsense. So
I'm proud of my Anglo. I've got quite Anglo-Saxon sensibilities in my language, I think. And
yes.
I say it's because I'm a working class girl. What I lack in H's, I make up for in F's.
Yeah. Do you know the British upper classes didn't use the F word until the First World War?
Really?
So I found this in a footnote in an AJP Taylor book, and I thought that's fascinating. He just mentions it, but it says to me that the classes just did not mix at all until they were in the trenches, really rubbing up against each other, and a fucking shell lands in your trench, and you're not gonna go, oh, fiddlesticks, are you?
Oh dear.
When all the privates go, fuck you now, you're gonna go, that actually does express what I'm feeling right now. But prior to 1914, the upper classes would never have said the F word. Any of those swear words would not have been in there.
We should do an episode, and I'm going to say this so we do, about the sort of evolution of English language. Because, I did linguistics at university.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's really fascinating.
It is fascinating. I read that Bill Bryson book on it, actually. That's a good book. Maybe we'll do that.
Mm.
So the different classes had different languages in this country right up until the Black Death. So that's middle of the 1300s. And they gradually merge into one at the time of Chaucer. But, you know, we still have... The posher word is the French word, and the more ordinary word is the English word. Mm. The other thing I'd say about 1066, it's the last time that a load of immigrants really did come over here and take all our jobs and take all our homes. And ever since then, all the immigrants that have come in the centuries since have started at the bottom and not at the top. And so they've, you know, the Normans didn't come over here and start driving minicabs and running late night takeaways. They were the ones who came in as a new ruling class. So though the DNA of the English was sort of set down in the Anglo-Saxon Norman mix, the other thing to say is, though there's been no invasion, there's been immigration.
Apart from William of Orange.
Yeah, William of Orange he did come up with an army.
Didn't he come into the sort of West Coast and basically... People in Cornwall went, yeah, come in. Do you want a pasty?
It was Devon. It was Devon. He landed in Torbay. But yeah, he was invited by certain parliamentarians.
Yeah, it wasn't a sort of massive bloody...
No, he was invited to the Glorious Revolution, but it was... Yeah. But he did turn up with an army, and they were guarding his palace with Dutch soldiers, not English, in 1688. But no, we've never been invaded properly like that. And I think that has also informed a certain... sense of British exceptionalism. It sort of made the people go, oh, the Armada couldn't get us, and Napoleon couldn't get us, and Hitler couldn't get us. You have to go back 1,000 years, and that's you get. But
so that's,
you know,
why we big up Hastings.
That's why
I make ourselves look special.
I think that might be a part of it. Yeah, but of course, ever since then, we've had our DNA continue and our gene pool has continued to mix and be enriched by Dutch weavers, German bakers, French Huguenots, Russian Jews, West Indian bus drivers, last week's episode, Congolese centre backs, you know, and all of them, you know, enriching our language, our culture, and our late night takeaways.
Yeah, this fallacy of your sort of average UKIP voter, that there's a pure any sense of what a pure Anglo-Saxon is. Even going back, as we said at the beginning, you know, Harold's surname's Godwinson. His half-brother was Tostig. I mean, they were not pure.
And but it's continued ever since. So the idea that it all stopped in 1066 is a fallacy. So when Nigel Farage talks about invasion and he's sitting on the bloody south bank looking at boats, maybe if someone stuck an arrow in his eye and chopped his bollocks off, then he would know what a real invasion looked like.
That was John O'Farrell who said that.
I'm just saying, use the conditional tense. If they did that, then... So there are no invasions of immigrants. So have I convinced you, Angela, that it's worth discussing and it's interesting?
You have. It is a meaty... And I think particularly it's the interesting bit is the sort of... Well, A, it's how it should just never have happened. Harold should... You know, it made so many mistakes, but also just the knock-on effect of it is so vast and so entrenched in our culture that we don't even.
I think I got you on wine versus beer. Actually, I think that's what I won you over.
Just when you said that, and I was like, "This is exactly the thing I've been arguing about at my wedding." Because we were talking about it, and Matt was like, "But people will expect there to be wine on the table." So I was like, "Well, it's not their wedding, is it? It's ours." So
they go fucking get some.
Yeah, exactly. I've had to buy beer at their weddings. They can buy wine at mine.
At last. Oh, I feel a strong sense of kinship with you now.
Oh.
Excellent. All right. Well, look, that's the Battle of Hastings, everyone. It was in, when was it again? What year was it?
Oh, I can't remember. 10-something.
10-something. thank you for listening to this episode. Keep sending in your suggestions.
Yeah, on Twitter, @WeArehistoryPod. John @WeArehistory. They are some band that John keeps tweeting about by accident.
It stopped about 10 years ago. So, yeah. And keep sending in your suggestions and we'll be back with another episode next
and
week.
And do, please, I know we keep asking, but it really helps the old algorithms if you give us a rate and review on iTunes. If you use iTunes, just it only takes a minute. Just give us 5 stars and a little review. We'd really appreciate that.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to hear her begging like
grovelling.
That.
I know. I've got no shame, John, because I'm an Anglo-Saxon sir. No
Let's
shame.
Go and have some beer and leave the wine to the uposh people. See you next time.
See you next time.